Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Violante. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with Jim Musgrave, author of Disappearance at Mount Sinai. This book is the second in the series of Pat O'Malley mini-mysteries. Set in the late 1800s during the post-Civil War era, Detective O'Malley is forced to face racism and anti-Semitism as he is challenged with this dangerous case. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Jim. Jim Musgrave was born in Fall River, Massachusetts. He worked for Caltech in Pasadena and continues to use his fascination with technology in his Detective Pat O'Malley steampunk mystery series. Jim was also a professor of English for 24 years, and he runs an editing business with his wife, Ellen, in San Diego. He has won many awards, including being a finalist in the Bram Stoker Awards and the Hicken Foundation Awards. For more information on Musgrave and his books, visit his website at www.contempinstruct.com, and that is contempinstruct.com. Hi, Jim. How are you today?
Hi, Susan. I'm doing well.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome. It's an honor.
You know that I find your work one of the most unique pieces of books that I ever found, because I had no idea that steampunk existed, believe it or not. It's I come from South America, and I never heard that term before we got your first book for review. So I'm a total fan of it. It reminds me of the Jim West movie type of thing, with all those machines and whatnot,
right,
just by
right.
the name. And when I saw that movie, I thought, never occurred to me that there was a genre, you know.
Right. But,
so I'm yeah. very excited to have you here, because it's something that I'm very curious about.
Yeah, I think there is a link to South American fiction, actually. Garcia Marquez, rest his soul. But, the magical realists were into... maybe not steampunk, but certainly, their version of magical happenings in their novels.
Yeah, for sure. And although I did have to study Gabriel Garcia Marquez when I was studying human... I think that even at the end of my senior year of high school, I still didn't put it two and two together with, anything that had to do with... the steampunk era of the 1800s or whatever. It was something
right.
that it was just not focused that way down there.
Right.
But so it's really interesting to me. But before we start talking yep. about your novels, and especially Disappearance at Mount Sinai, I wanted to know a little bit more about yourself. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm an owner of a new business. It's called English Majors, Editors, and Publishers, and it's based out of San Diego, although I have developers in, Utah, China, Pakistan, you name it. I think I have a developer. I like to make it an international organization because you get talent from everywhere these days. And I'm also an indie author. After having been published the traditional route in the 90s, I decided to go the independent route, and I've been a supporter ever since. I belong to the Independent Book Publishers Association out of California, and I'm a firm supporter of independent publishing wherever it creeps up. Some people think independent publishing is poor publishing, but I happen to believe that if one pursues it in the correct way, you can be just as good as any of the big five publishing giants out there.
I couldn't agree more with you. And we've noticed a big, the stigma of the indie publishing for many bookstores and people and readers actually was the quality mostly of the book and the increase in the quality of work and editing and production that we have seen this past couple of years have been amazing to the point that you see a lot of indies taking away all the awards on the literary end. So I think, and many bestsellers are coming out from the indie world as well. So I couldn't agree more. It was just a learning period.
Yes, I think there was a gap in the learning. And I think indies can take more risks, you know, than the big publishers. They kind of want a sure thing, which is understandable. They're pretty much in it for the money. But I think indies can take chances where they can't, and a lot of times that turns into, you know, a viral hit, as we've seen.
And let's face it, indies are there because they love what they're doing.
Right.
And, you know, it's different, though, when you're an indie and you're, you know, doing your own work, and it's just totally different. It doesn't feel like working, so they're more open to be there 24/7 and
right.
for new angles, and especially with their fans, you know, giving so much to their fans.
That's right.
So you've been in both ends. Tell us a little bit of what your experience has been in each one.
Okay, well, when I was published, it was a nonfiction book in 1996, and I landed the contract, the book contract, at a conference up north. Electronic publishing was just beginning, really, to get ahead of steam, so to speak. And so I got an agent, and I went the traditional route for my nonfiction book. I'm an educator, so I had an academic angle to pitch. And so I wrote a book on digital writing. It was called The Digital Scribe, a Writer's Guide to Electronic Media. It was published by Harcourt in 96. And so, you know, I got the advance and the usual, you know, it was a pretty nice advance for a nonfiction book. But what happened to me was that even with an agent representing me, I discovered after the book was internationally published and it had a CD in the back, it was pretty cool for the time, I didn't receive a cent of royalty on the book. And no matter how much, you know, it was pushed, and I never got any kind of detail on the sales figures or anything from the publisher. And so, you know, it kind of soured me, or at least that experience. Soured me to the commercial publishers and their world. And so I began exploring, you know, this idea of independent publishing because the technology, you know, I was writing about it, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So,
might as well be the guinea pig, right?
Yeah, right. I might as well practice what I preach. And so that's exactly what I did. I started looking into the technicalities and the details of independent publishing. And, you know, one thing led to another, and now I'm fully on the road to that. And I've independently published all of my titles, which include about 8 novels, 3 short story collections, several nonfiction books. These are all authored by me, and now I've branched out and I'd like to publish other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that leads to my current project, which is getting showing the public about how enhanced ebooks and ebook reader that we're going to develop here shortly will be the wave of the future, I believe.
And that's actually taking me to my next question, because you did state about that your fourth novel was an enhanced version, an enhanced ebook version, and I wasn't sure what you meant by that.
Okay, what it is especially in the steampunk genre that's open to so much creativity anyway, there are a lot of authors who when they discover steampunk, they go, wow, you know, this is what I've been waiting for, especially sci-fi authors, you know.
And I must interrupt you and tell people to go to your website, because the graphics that you have on your website are awesome. I don't know who made those, but they are awesome. And your website is contempinstruct.com, and that is contempinstruct.com.
Yes.
So again, it's contempinstruct.com. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. That's a good plug. So Steam City Pirates Enhanced is really the fourth novel in my series. I started out kind of conventionally, you know, with the mystery series. The first novel in the series is entitled Forevermore. By the way, it's a finalist in two independent contests, so I'm kind of proud of that, as is the novel Disappearance at Mount Sinai. It's a finalist also. So I'm proud of my independent series of the Pat O'Malley detective series. But anyway, the first three books were basically conventional mysteries set in post-Civil War New York City. And what happened was my publicist, Jennifer Perry, I kind of nicknamed her the sorceress because she gets me into some strange and interesting concepts, had been telling me about this steampunk stuff. And I'd really never, as you were, I was a novice. I'd never really read anything. Mm-hmm. And I read a book called How to Write Steampunk by Beth Daniels. And it was a very short book, but it was aimed directly at authors who are new to the genre. I had written and published some sci-fi, so I wasn't unfamiliar with, you know, this kind of atmosphere. But this whole steam city, or this steampunk genre, led me to bring my protagonist, Detective O'Malley, who's a Civil War vet, directly into steampunk.
Yeah.
And so the third novel, Jane the Grabber, plunges O'Malley into steampunk, and then the fourth novel is all about the world of the imaginative genre of steampunk.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Jim Musgrave, author of Disappearance at Mount Sinai. Stay tuned, because we are going to continue this interesting conversation with Jim about his own experience in indie publishing, his steampunk novels, and his enhanced ebook version. But in the meantime, you can check out his books by visiting his website at www.contempinstruct.com. So if I would, I didn't know anything about this genre. So if I would like to know a definition of a steampunk novel, how would
Yes.
you define it?
Okay, loosely given, a definition of a steampunk book would be one that is usually set in the Victorian era. Mm-hmm. And it can be any location in any part of the world, South, North America, Europe, wherever. I just happened to set mine in New York City in the 1860s. But it also should have the, shall we call, the gentility of the time, you know, the kind of elevated vocabulary, the the fine craftsmanship that was still present in those days in 19th century, and kind of an awareness that things were much slower and people thought about things a lot more and discussed them. Not a lot of the instant gratification that we get today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Things were built up, love relationships and mystery and intrigue, you know, all of this was slowed down. And I think this is much of the appeal and popularity of these novels, are the authors who can bring out this rich texture or background of setting. Mm-hmm. And they really, you know, use conventional plotting methods that most authors use for mysteries and sci-fi and so forth. But I think it's really the texture of the setting, you know, of the 19th century, and then using, you know, gadgetry and inventions, maybe from the future or from sci-fi, like time travel. A lot of steampunk has time travel in it. I use it. And that's about it. Steampunk is very open to all kinds of new ideas and explorations by authors, and that's why they like it, I think.
Yeah, it's an excellent landscape for adventures, you know,
mm-hmm.
or for series is actually, and, you know, an exceptional character.
Airship, pirates, you know, brothel madams. I have a hero in my book who's a brothel madam, and so...
So, but what intrigued me about your writing and your projects, and at least with Mount Sinai, disappearance at Mount Sinai has also a exploration, if you may,
mm-hmm.
about the anti-Semitism
mm-hmm.
and racism during the Civil War era, which I was
mm-hmm.
not aware about. So how,
mm-hmm.
how did that come through?
Well, my wife happens to be a Jew, and so I get a lot of information about the culture and how the diaspora after, you know, the fall of Jerusalem, the second fall of Jerusalem, and a lot of Jews had to spread out over the world with less than warm greetings in most cases, especially if you were poor. And so I did a lot of research at her behest and prodding. And that's where I came up with a plot for the second novel, was this kind of anti-Semitism that existed during the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
as well as afterward, and some pretty high dignitaries were involved in this anti-Semitic behavior. I mentioned General Grant, Ulysses S. Grant, former president of the United States, as well as, you know, the short-termed president who, Johnson, Andrew Johnson, who took over for Lincoln mm-hmm. when he was shot. He was a slave owner, and he was a pretty adamant anti-Semite in his own right. So, you know, all these things I found out in research of their letters, personal correspondence, and so forth. And I used them in the novel.
That must be such an interesting research work that you did there.
Yes, it is. And I like to include that in historical-type novels and even mysteries because I think people appreciate it. You know, they like to they like to mix the reality with the fiction.
Yeah.
I think it makes it a little more interesting.
I'm a history fan to start with, and so for writing, and I do also historical fiction on my books. It never occurred to me to go that route with
mm-hmm.
a genre such as steampunk adventures.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's awesome what you did, and it gives you a big, broad way of taking history and messages like the ones that you are taking with this book, Disappearance in Mount Sinai, to the readers of that love those sci-fi type of movies and books. So have you ever thought about having one of your books go on the big screen?
Don't we all? Yeah. Yeah, I was. Yeah, my undergrad was film and radio and TV, so I'm well. I understand that world, and it was. Yeah, it would be certainly fun to see that made into a movie or any of my work.
You know, it would have never occurred to me until I saw your website and the graphics that you have in there. And so I invite all of our readers and possibly film producers, producers, you know. But visit, again, Jim's website at contentinstruct.com. It's an awesome website. I have not seen anything like it, so I really want to mention it a couple of times. It does give some, you know, view of what you have envisioned for this world that you created on your book. I also want to go into the formatting of the books, because you are talking about, you know, going
the
into
enhancement.
And the enhancement on
right.
the ebook version, but also you're going to be looking into publishing new people. So
yes.
Are you setting yourself, I mean, are your books only ebooks, or do you have also print formats, or, I mean, formatting, when you decide what type of book you're going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is the philosophy here? I mean, I know that there's a future on ebooks that keeps growing, you know, on preference for readers.
Right.
And so where do you go from now on? What's the future of ebooks, and is the print format included in that future?
Yes, I think print will probably never die. We'll always enjoy the quality print book in some form or other. I think perhaps it'll become more of like part of the wealthy, you know, the 1% collector's items. It may, you know, go into that area, but I think fast approaching is this steamrolling integration of film, audio. I mean, there's a young company called BookTrack. I think it's in it's one of the Scandinavian countries. I can't remember anyway. But it has an awesome site where they're it's mostly into educational stuff right now, but they're doing fiction as well. But what they do is give you the opportunity to create music tracks and sound effects for your book. And so that's just the tip of the iceberg, I believe, because what I want to get into is the total integration of sound, video, animation, and so forth into the book, and even into fiction books. You mentioned historical books. You know, how cool is it while you're reading about, say, Edgar Allan Poe, and you're able to explore, you know, where he lived in Baltimore, or the cottage in the Bronx that he stayed in New York City. You know, all these in-depth additions are called enhancements to these books. So my company, we want to kind of go the full route from just the bare minimum ebook publishing, you know, with a few images, up and through, you know, fully enhanced types of titles.
Those
so I think
enhancement, it's going to make the movie industry almost obsolete.
Well, it's happening now, you know. That's why there's been this Net Neutrality Act, you know. And
yeah.
they're scrambling, you know, to get their hands around stuff. But hopefully there'll always be a market for the independent.
Yeah, yeah. I love to ask in my interviews, my authors, and we're getting to that point close to the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always a point on all authors' lives where you're on a crossroads and you're thinking of what you want to do and what you are doing right now, and you know there's somewhere in there that you decide to just throw yourself with 2 feet in the authorship and publishing world. So if you could go back and find yourself in that point and talk to your own persona, knowing what you know now, What would you tell yourself?
I think I would tell myself to believe in your vision more and maybe take more chances earlier on. I don't think I did that. I kind of got disappointed by the big players, you know, the big five. And so I kind of pulled back a bit. And I would tell myself, you know, don't be afraid. You know, competition is competition. And you can run with the big dogs as long as you have quality as the goal. Yeah, I think that's probably what I tell myself.
That's awesome. For our listeners, we are talking to Gene Musgrave. We are talking mostly about his book, Disappearance at Mount Sinai, but he has such a great and interesting niche of genre here with the Steampunk Adventures that I really encourage you to check out his website and all his other work. His website, again, is contemptinstruct.com. And, Jim, this is a wonderful interview and very interesting to that end, too. So thank you so much again for sharing so much about your projects and about your own, I guess, journey through it.
Yes, it's quite a journey, right?
Yeah,
and I thank you, Susan, for the time, and good luck with your own writing and into the historical genre.
Thank you so much. And listeners, again, thank you so much for joining us. Again, visit Jim's website at contempinstruct.com. And until next time.